Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I'm your host, Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the community manager and content creator here at Living Sober. And today I am joined from the other side of the world, west coast of the United States, by Veronica Varley. This is a real treat. Veronica is an author. She's a podcaster, a recovery advocate and coach. She's a clinical psychotherapist. She's a wife, a mother, and of course, she is sober. Welcome.
Thank you. It's so great to be here. Yeah.
It's really nice to connect with you. We were just talking before I hit record about how we've kind of danced around each other online.
Yeah, and admired you from afar.
And connected, but never actually had a face-to-face. So this is a real treat.
Yeah.
So I know you've done a lot, and I am going to link to all your sites and what have you in the blog post around this post. But for people who aren't aware, can you just share a bit of your story in terms of your drinking and what led you into this recovery space?
Yes. So I've been sober coming up to, well, on May 2nd, it'll be 22 years. So I got sober when I was 27, which is relatively quite young. And I was absolutely finished at that point. I always felt like there was something wrong with me. Like I remember being a child and just feeling very uncomfortable in my own skin. And then I think our drinking cultures are fairly similar. I started drinking at 14, 15, and it was the solution. I mean, it was the first thing that made me feel like I fit, you know, like I was comfortable in my own skin.
Oh, I know. I can relate.
Yeah. And you know, we grew up in a culture where, you know, binge drinking is really, I couldn't wait to do that. That's what everyone around me was doing. And I just couldn't wait to be that adult. And so I was going to clubs and bars at 15 years old and getting absolutely trolleyed. And I thought I was having a great time. I can remember I went into blackout drinking at the beginning of my drinking and at the end. It's a bit weird. But I remember being in blackout when I was 15 years old. In a pub, I could feel myself, and then I woke up outside the pub, literally in the gutter, covered in my own vomit, with the landlord throwing a bucket of water over me. And I remember thinking, this is not like right. And then everyone around me the next few days, all my friends went, that was a wild night. You are like such a party girl.
There was no sort of frowning upon that behavior or indeed concern. It was just a normal thing. This is in the UK, right?
Completely normalized. Yeah, completely normalized. And then what happens is you don't trust yourself because everyone around you going, oh my God, that was such a great night. You were so, and you're like, oh, okay. And I just bought into all of that, even though the price for me, the cost of drinking, was very high from the word go. We just normalize abnormal drinking. We normalize it in our language, in our culture.
That's the same here in New Zealand. Yeah. I mean, yeah. you see someone legless at a wedding and no one says a word. It is totally accepted and like you say, normalized.
Completely normalized. And the consequences are just sort of, we have a, like, just, it's like that part of our brain, that bit just falls through our brains. We just don't, we believe that drinking, like we need to drink, like we have to have alcohol. So I totally bought into the belief system that we have, that alcohol is the best way to have fun, excitement, belonging, connection, to relax and to reward yourself, to get romance and sex as well. I totally believed alcohol was the best way to have those things. And I was off and running. I used, drugs are a big part of my story. That kind of changed things for me when I was 18. I went into drug-induced psychosis. And then I had, which I realized, I didn't at the time, I thought I was the only person who had this problem. But I realized I had really bad, my alcohol and drug use caused really bad anxiety and panic attacks. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't think I've worked or met with anyone who hasn't had really bad anxiety when they drink. And then I started to use drink to cope with that anxiety, because when you're going into a situation, it's it works more or less for those first couple of hours, right? It just calms that fear down of social situations, dealing with people. So I began drinking to cope with my anxiety and drinking in secret. And that had a whole bunch of problems to it. And it just, so I thought from 18 years old, I knew something was wrong with me, but I thought it was a rare mental health problem that nobody else had. So I was looking for help for my mental health problem, the anxiety, the panic attacks. It never occurred, never crossed my mind that there was something wrong with my drinking. It's like adults drink.
So how did that come up as an issue? Was it dealing with a professional who raised it, or what sort of got a spotlight on that?
So I went to lots of places for help, and I got all sorts of prescription medication for the anxiety, and never thought or was really asked about my drinking. And I did a lot of geographicals. I moved around a lot. I was always running away from myself, jobs, men, countries, just running away from myself. Yeah. Look, you know, if I have that, if I go over there, then I'll be happy.
This will fix it.
Yeah, this will fix it. So long story very short, because I had all this anxiety and panic attacks, I didn't deal well with groups. And I thought, I need a job where I work one-on-one. And I thought I could be like a therapist because that's one-on-one. So the local college had an addictions counseling course. And I thought, all right, I'll have a look at that. And I started doing that and things started, you know, I was like,
amazing.
And then I met someone who was sober, and I'd never met anyone who didn't drink. And she also seemed quite happy. And I was like, wow, that's a thing. Like,
right.
Bloody hell. And I got sober in the 12-step programs because I got sober in 2000. There wasn't really anything else then. The internet wasn't even really a thing. And I went to some 12-step meetings because I wanted to see these poor people would be like that I was going to help. And I was in this sort of like, it was beginning to dawn on me how destructive my alcohol use was. And it was just introduced, like I just met people who didn't drink and they looked really all right. And I was like, I just kind of blew my mind that was possible. And so what happened was I stopped drinking for a little bit. I didn't identify with anybody. I was 27. I'd never been arrested. I never had a DUI, never been fired from a job.
All like those cliches that we look for those outward markers of a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think that, like I had, you know, I used the word alcoholic then. I just didn't think I fitted that until I heard a man talk about fear. And he spoke about fear in a way that I've never heard anyone to speak about fear. And he spoke about how fear ruled his life, a fear of not being good enough, fear of not being worthy of love. And everything came from that. And his drinking came from that. And that for me was my like, oh my God, that's me. That's exactly how I feel. And other people feel like that too. It was my just that. Was uh-huh. That was like, and then people started saying, I used to feel like that too, and I don't anymore. And I was like, there's a solution to this.
And I was, wow.
And I was all in, you know, because I felt like I'd been looking for help and an answer for 10 years. I'd been looking for an answer, but I didn't know what my problem was. I thought it was mental health,
but you still came to it. And I want to come back to dealing with, you know, what you had to deal with once the alcohol was removed, because for everyone, it's not as simple as just taking the alcohol away, everything's sweet. You know, there are often underlying things. But before then, just about this being 27, because you're right, it is unusual. And, you know, on our site, most people are in that midlife bracket, 40s, 50s, 60s even, before they start going, this isn't serving me, this isn't doing what I want, et cetera, et cetera. So how did it feel at 27 when you're still wanting to probably be out socializing, being at clubs, you know, young in your 20s? How did that feel then facing not drinking ever again?
So, yeah, it is more than unusual, but I think there's a big reason why is I used cocaine as well. And those two, it just finished me off. I had no serotonin. I was suicidal. I was in a really bad place. So I think it was the combination of those things. And so it was strange at the first. I then saw that I knew I shouldn't use cocaine. I understood that. But then I saw that I had to stop drinking as well. And I wasn't happy about that because I believed the lie that it's the best way to have fun, excitement, yeah. belong, connection. But I was prepared to do that in exchange for peace in my mind.
The chaos was just
yes,
so great.
Yeah. If I could have peace and safety, like I didn't think I was going to be happy or like I just like I was more than prepared to trade, make that trade. And like if I can just not have the panic attacks and the fear and the paranoia, then I'll be like a quiet nun for the rest of my life. I just, you know, I just want a place to live and a job. Yeah.
Wow. So
it took about, you know, I think if I was 11 months sober when I went, I wanted to go dance. We like I had a bunch, I met a few people who's about my age and we wanted, and we were newly sober and we wanted to go dancing. So we went together to a bar and we went dancing. And it was very weird. And then I did it a few more times. And then it was like, began to be all right. And I began to, it's like, when you stop drinking, you know, your life expands. And I began to have sort of the shift in perception. And that's all sobriety is. It's a shift in perception. Mm-hmm. So by the time I was 28, 29, things had got so much better. And I was very clear that things have got better because I didn't drink. Like there was no doubt in my mind that that was directly related to being sober. So it was, I think I started very early on in that is completely off the table for me. Like,
yeah,
there's no ifs or buts or maybes.
Gone.
I cannot fuck with that.
Yeah.
So, and then I sort of saw, you know, I was making the links. It's like, I am like enjoying myself. I'm feeling so much better in myself. And I know that I can see it's because I'm sober. So by 28, I was going to nightclubs, dancing. I was going to festivals.
So great. Having a great time, probably. I mean, I have so much fun now at those sorts of events where you can actually concentrate on the music, connect with people, not go to the loo every 5 minutes, not go to the bar every 5 minutes, you know.
I remember, like, I love live music. And I remember, like, going to my first live concert. I think it was U2. And actually, I think I went with some – I think they were Kiwis because I had some Kiwi and Aussie friends.
Yeah.
And so they were like, because in New Zealand, you don't get a lot of live.
No.
So they were like every week they would go and see someone. So I was like, oh, you know, every so often I'll go with you as well. They're brilliant. Like Kiwis in England are like, they do everything.
We do. I did the same when I was there. Yeah, we're going to soak it up. I've got 2.5 years of this. Ah.
Yeah. So we went and like they were like, big U2 fans, couldn't wait. It was weeks, blah, blah, blah. And they all drank. And I remember, like, we were there at the front. I was there. And I'm like, you know, to get to the toilet and to get to the bar was like a 20-minute. Mm. And I'm like, you're missing. And I was like, I am having more fun than they are.
Yeah.
Like, they keep so missing things. Or, like, we're here singing and they can't get through the – I'm like – And so you just have all these kind of realizations.
I know. And they start clicking into place. I mean, one of my biggest regrets was going to see a band called Elbow. I don't know if you know them. They're English and I absolutely adore them. And they came to New Zealand and it was right before I got sober and I was really deep in my addiction and I got absolutely shit-faced. It was at a small venue. I mean, oh gosh, if I could go back. I fell over for no reason. I was talking to some people in a carpeted area. There wasn't anyone around me, nothing, and I just literally lost my balance and fell over. I was that drunk. It was just a write-off. And now, like you, I love concerts. It's the one time where, as a sober person, you can pretty much guarantee a big endorphin rush.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and the other thing is, you know, I'd go out on a Saturday night, say we'd go to a club and, you know, dance and like I'd spend, you know, 10 quid and, you know, on a couple of Cokes and the entrance fee and that's it. At about 12 o'clock, I'd leave because people get messy drunk, not really interested in that. I've had a nice time. And then I'll be up at 8 a.m. on a Sunday going for a run and what have you. And I'm just like, it's the man, you know, I remember times like that. Like I did the same, I went to Nirvana. I saw Nirvana right before Kurt Cobain killed himself. And I was pretty wasted. I mean, I do, but it's like, I remember laughing about it. Oh, it must be great. Now I just can't remember half of it. Like, that's insane. It's so stupid. And I always talk about, like, with my work, it's the emperor's new clothes, right? We're all standing there going, oh, yeah, it must have been a great night because I can't remember half of it. And I'm going, yeah, no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
It's much better, you know, yeah, doing it sober and all that kind of stuff.
I know, people are kidding themselves. Hey, back to the, if you don't mind, the sort of issues you were having in terms of anxiety and panic attacks. Did that all go away after you stopped drinking the panic attacks and the anxiety, or is it something you have had to manage as a sober person?
No, they did eventually go. It took a little bit of time, and I had to get some help. One of the things you do now is EFT, emotional freedom technique, tapping, which is fantastic for anxiety. I didn't know about it then. And a lot of the times I white knuckled it, but it got considerably better. And eventually my brain chemistry and everything normalized. But it was that, but it was also, I did a lot of work on myself. So I learned a lot of personal develop things like how to have boundaries, how to deal with other people that helped navigate this world be a lot easier.
And you're really good at that stuff. I looked on your social media, I see it all the time, but you're really good at breaking down those sorts of things that are sort of basic life skills but often don't get the prominence that they should as we're growing up, or even talking with our friends about it. And it's that type of thing that can be so helpful for people when they're transitioning from a boozy life to a sober one. You know, we often say no is a sentence.
And that's what I then discovered, is it's not just about not drinking, because when you default to alcohol to manage your emotions in the way that I did, you know, I drank to manage how I felt. You know, I remember breaking up with a boyfriend and going to the off license and thinking, this is a 2-bottle of wine job, not a 1-bottle of wine job. So you miss developing really key skills that you need as an adult to deal with disappointment and fear and all of that. So I was an emotional child. I mean, I've really just had, and so that's the work of sobriety, is beginning to learn these just personal development tools.
And it's uncomfortable at first, because I can remember walking around being newly sober, having a bad day, a grumpy day, a sad day, and literally feeling like I was bursting out of my skin, or wearing some kind of torture suit and looking for, what's the solution to this? What do I do to this? Yeah. And just not, because I wasn't used to feeling it. I mean, it's so cliched and basic, but it's the truth, right?
Yeah, it's that feeling of wanting to run away from yourself. Mm. Like I got to about 3 years of sobriety and I hit another rock bottom. I didn't drink, but I was in a very, very dark place. And it was all because of romantic relationships. I was so dysfunctional and needy and had such low self-esteem. I couldn't have them, and it caused a massive amount of pain. But that pain then motivated me to really work hard on myself, deal with abandonment issues, all of that kind of stuff, because I just it's just too hard. I wanted to like run away from me, and wherever you go, there you are, of course.
Yeah, when you think back to 27-year-old Veronica now, and I mean, it's, you know, I talk to you here and you're doing amazing work and you look gorgeous and you're doing so well. I mean, I'm sure you have bad moments as well, but when you think back to that chaotic 27-year-old who was in a world of pain emotionally and outwardly, what do you think and feel about her?
Oh, I have great compassion and tenderness for her. I really feel great love for her. I really, you know, I wouldn't change anything, because it's got me here, and it's what being in that amount of pain forced me to do this work to get me here. But I also wouldn't want my children to have to go through that to get the stuff that I have. And I don't believe that's necessary. I have just complete tenderness and love for her. And I'd love to go back in time and tell her it's all going to be okay. I mean, I was so lost and I was so lonely. I mean, although my 20s were just, I felt like I was behind a glass screen looking at everybody else get on with their lives. And I felt so alone and unlovable. And I am very grateful for what I have. Everything I have today, my sons, my husband, my business, my book, it's all because of sobriety. And I've never lost sight of that. And I have never stopped being grateful. I am so grateful. And, you know, my life isn't perfect. We have ups and downs. We have things going on. It's the difference is, today I have the tools to deal with that stuff. I don't feel like there's, you know, I feel like I can deal with life even when it's rough, because that's just how life is. Yeah. It's never always going to be, you know, fixed and perfect. So gratitude, I think, is one of the, and people I meet long-term sobriety usually have that gratitude. What I want to say, so you said to me at the beginning that this, you know, a lot of people are quite new. It's really important to know that early sobriety is not how it is long-term. That first year, those first 6 months when it feels like you want to crawl out of your skin, or it feels really hard, or it feels really uncomfortable, it isn't like that long-term. It's like that at the beginning because it's such a massive transition, but it does change. And it's really important to know that, like, I mean, can you imagine at 21 years of sobriety if I was still staying away from everyone? Yeah, it'd be awful. I just live my life.
Yeah, I know. That's the same as me. I often say that, you know, I talk about, for me, I use the language of being in recovery. I am in recovery. That doesn't mean that I'm desperately trying not to drink alcohol every day.
Yeah.
That means that I have an eye constantly on what I'm doing to look after myself. How am I going? Is this working? Is that working? What do I need? Yeah. For me, that's being in recovery. It's a process. So getting sober is an event, but recovery is a lifelong process of trying to live, you know, as best you can with everything that comes along. You know, just when you feel like you've got something nailed, something new comes along. It's like constantly changing. But hey, I just wanted to ask you a bit. I was looking at your Instagram just before we came on here, and you know, again, for people who don't know, Veronica does amazing work in the online space around what I call the soberverse, you know, around promoting recovery and highlighting things that are damaging around our alcohol culture. And I really liked the post you put up recently where you shared a clip of a liquor ad, which was, you know, there's this move now where the alcohol industry is trying to help make alcohol healthy. Right? Have you noticed it? It's all organic, it's all botanicals, or it's a seltzer, you know, or it's this, that. It's all just bullshit. But you particularly talked about this ad. I don't know if you can remember where said they were trying to be woke. and you wrote, stop, this is the quote, I wrote this down, stop co-opting feminism to sell alcohol to women, because this is what goes on. Can you talk a bit about that? What does that mean exactly? And what is going on there?
So there's a couple of things. Alcohol is now being marketed as a wellness product. So it's organic, no pesticides, some removing a bunch of other things. So it's presented, it's like, oh, I can have a drink and be healthy. I mean, I'd have loved that. Yeah. And that really appeals to women who are always watching their weight and tend to be more into the organic, you know, green juice, all of that kind of stuff. So in our minds, what happens is it's healthier. And I'm like, guys, the problem is not the pesticides. The problem is the ethanol. It's the same thing you've been putting on your hands for 2 years to not get COVID. That's what's in it. So it's marketing it as a wellness product, but it's also, this one that I do this, people send them to me and I kind of do a deconstruct the marketing garble. This one was about, it was very woke. It was they want to ignite conversations with good men about feminism. And somehow their alcohol product was going to do that.
It's going to help. Like,
it's just wine in a can.
Yeah. Yeah, which, as you say, it's ethanol, it's addictive, it's carcinogenic, it's toxic. It's still inherently.
Thing. Yeah, it's the worst thing to ever recommend to a woman. The worst thing. It's a central nervous system depressant. Women have enough to be depressed about in this world.
Yeah, people are surprised when they hear that because I think of it as an uplifting drug. But I always say it is a depressant because the end result on the central nervous system is dulling, numbing, slowing down, depressing. And you know, especially since, like you said, when you first got sober, the internet wasn't really around, but especially since we've had the internet, social media, Facebook and the like, there's has been this real push towards women bonding and togetherness around this alcohol. And if you've had a hard day at home with the kids and you look on Facebook at 5 and someone's holding up a shiny glass of Chardonnay and you do the same, you feel somehow connected, but it's so flawed, right?
It's a disservice to women. You know, I really think it's gaslighting women. And there's a long history of marketing products. You know, Valium was marketed as mother's little helper. There's a long history of anesthetizing women to the realities of womanhood and motherhood. And it's like, you know, if we weren't all anesthetized, we'd be angry enough to demand more changes.
Exactly.
And affordable childcare and better health services.
And equal pay and all the rest of it. Yeah, I know. Speaking of the online and the, you know, environment, shall we say, around our alcohol, this product that holds such a privileged place in our society, I do feel like, I mean, it's minute, but there is a shift. Like, even I've only been compared to you, sober for 10 years, but even since I quit 10 years ago and I first started my blog, there has been an increase markedly, still kind of niche, but there's an increase even in the mainstream media here in New Zealand, I don't know about where you are, where there is a bit more talk about being sober curious. There is a bit more talk about, there's more people coming open, being open about being in recovery. There are more recovery advocates, sobriety coaches, people, you know, it's exploding, right? I mean, what do you think about what's happening in that space, and what's your hope for the future?
Yes, and I think you can directly link that to the rise of Instagram. It's in the last 5 to 7 years. So when I got sober back in 2000, it was still a dirty little secret. It wasn't something you were encouraged to talk about publicly. And I think a lot of that has been the confusing message from AA, where the whole notion of anonymity is being confused with secrecy. That's not what it meant. So I think that what happened is, with the rise of Instagram, women were beginning to share these stories, and they didn't fit the stereotype of an alcoholic, or, you know, they didn't use that word, and they were, you know, beginning to show what alcohol-free could be like. So I think it's all to the good. I can't imagine getting sober now, like my first day, thinking like maybe I should stop drinking, and then going on Instagram and being like, like, wow, these people look like me, and like, really? Like, so I think it's all very positive. It's how we break down the stigma. I think it's, we have, my goal as a mother is, I want not drinking to be like being a vegetarian. So if you think 40 years ago, if you were vegetarian or vegan, people would be like, might be able to rustle up a salad, but you weren't catered for. Now I can go anywhere and be gluten-free, dairy-free, nut-free, and I am catered for, and nobody would bat an eyelid. You know, you don't go and, if I go to a dinner party and I say, oh, I'm gluten-free, nobody goes, go on, have a bread roll, have a breadstick, one won't hurt. So I want not drinking to be like that, where it's a really legitimate lifestyle choice. And people, you know, I write about this in my book. It's not just people getting sober, which is very different to being alcohol-free. Alcohol-free is where people are like, I don't really quite manage without it. I'm not interested. It is that this growing alcohol-free movement, I want my kids to see that, that you can have a full life experience and not miss out on anything by being alcohol-free. And I'm also teaching my kids that alcohol always has a cost. There is a cost, and you need to be prepared to pay the cost.
So that's a really good one.
You can have fun. You can have fun. You can, you know.
I like that a lot, actually, Veronica. Can, that works well for me with teenagers who are starting to drink. Sorry, I'd cut you off, but I really, that's new for me, because I know about the modeling and the showing. It's a, you know, we can live and have fun. And obviously you and I do that. There's no more powerful thing to do than model living without alcohol. But actually having that thing of like, alcohol has a cost, and putting that into the mix and the dialogue is really good. I like that. Thank you.
So no worries. Go ahead, take that one. You know, a couple of times we've seen like a show where there's been a drunk person. We've sometimes seen one. We actually have a family member. We've seen that. And that my eldest has asked me, he says, Mummy, are they drunk? Is that what happened to a drunk? And what I said is, yeah. And they said, why are they behaving like that? And I say, because often when you drink, you lose yourself a little bit. So you're not who you really are. He's kind of, so I do this with clients. It's the first thing I do is we do a cost benefit analysis.
Oh, good.
And we add up money, time, cost to our relationships, dignity, integrity, opportunities, all of that kind of stuff. And then I'm like, if you're happy with the cost, crack on.
Yeah.
And that's when people realize they're not happy.
Well, that's good.
So that's how I'm presenting it to my son.
No, I love that. It's about informing, you know.
Yes.
If you're talking about ethics, which I have been a lot lately with my studies, and I studied in a previous life ethics around reality TV, but informed consent, having all the information, that's the problem with the marketing. It's not giving all the information, you know, about this product.
It completely presents it as without cost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the best vehicle to the land of fun, excitement, belonging, connection, relaxing, rewarding. Yeah. And yes, you can sometimes have those things with alcohol, but you will pay a price every single time. And that bit we don't talk about it. It's not presented. So that's why I push back hugely with the cost of drinking. Mm. And I'm almost 50. And one of the things I realized post 45, the huge benefit of getting sober at 27 is it doesn't show up on my face or my body. No, and imagine what's doing to your insides.
Oh, I know. I shudder to think. I turned 50 last year, Veronica. It's a thing. I'm just saying, get ready.
I know. I'm preparing myself.
There's a moment where you're like, holy, there's no denying the direction you're headed, which, I mean, obviously, that's all what we do every day is head in one direction. But anyway, look, thank you so much. You are amazing. And there was so much in that that I personally found really valuable, and I know our members will too. I will link to all your social media sites and your blog and your book. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
And just keep up the great work. It's so nice to connect with you.
Yeah, same to you, Mrs. D. I've loved your stuff. So it's really great to be connected. And thank you so much for having me.
Okay, cheers.